Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 9th of August. Thanks to John Munson for filling in for me while I was on vacation in Spooner, Wisconsin, week number one, and in Cook, Minnesota, week number two. No television, no radio, finally a little bit of a newspaper and an internet for a day. But we were listening to the loons. The only thing I know is there are 10,000 loons in Minnesota. Number one loon population in the U.S. Do you know what number two is? Maine, 4,000 loons. That's about it. That's about all I learned the last couple of weeks. No, I did read the newspapers yesterday, and I know that you have been keeping track of all that's going on. It's all things political. The first hour of our program today, and we will meet our guest momentarily. The second hour of the program, people are off to college pretty soon, and some of you are returning to college to teach, or you are students. The director of University Counseling Center at UW-Oshkosh will be joining us the second hour of our program. And we'll be looking at a number of issues. You have all this freedom when you go back to college, and how do you regulate that freedom? How do you keep active a life of the mind with a life of good times? Joe says a good question, and this is a good place to start. What mistakes did you make when you were in college? What did you do that was really smart, either as a parent or as a student? So keep those thoughts in mind as we talk about going to college for the first time, hour number two. Melinda Henneberger is our guest this hour, editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com, and she is also the author, If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want. She also is a columnist, or has been, for the Catholic opinion journal Commonweal. She has previously been a reporter for the New York Times, working for 10 years as a Washington correspondent and as the Rome bureau chief. She's written a column for Newsweek.com, and she has twins, actually, and says they are highly political 13-year-old twins. We'll be welcoming phone calls. We have a lot to talk about. We'll discuss the horrendous story of the medical aid workers who were killed in Afghanistan in remote Afghan villages, and how that has shaken the Western aid community. We will talk about jobless rates. We'll talk about combat troops leaving Iraq, and more on Afghanistan, too. What our strategy there is, if we're seeing any kind of success. I guess we can touch on Michelle Obama's trip to Spain, which has been somewhat controversial, and whatever you would like to put on the table. Here's our phone number, as always, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would care to send us an email, you can do that. That is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Chrissy Pease is answering our calls today, so chat with her, and we'll be with you on the air momentarily. Melinda, hello. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure.
You probably wanted to stay with the loons.
They were so beautiful.
I'll bet.
Yeah, and we saw the Northern Lights and the constellations all of that. So it's just so relaxing. It's good, but it's weird, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever done this, to be away from the news for that long a period of time.
I have had a couple of periods of being away from all internet access. One, last year, I really was on the Appalachian Trail when certain others we could name were only pretending to be there. And we took a little hike again this year. And it's strange how addicted you are to being in touch. It's not that easy at first.
No, it isn't, is it? But then you realize all you've missed, the loons and the stars and the water and all of that, which is good. So before we get down to really serious business, how does a parent successfully raise twins who are highly political?
Well, I don't know if those two things go together, successful and highly political. Our poor children, my husband and I, have both covered politics for years, so I think they were ruined from the start. But they really have been, you know, fed politics morning, noon, and night. The second or third thing my son said was Al Gore.
Oh no!
Yeah. Another time he came rushing in at the height of Plamegate involving Valerie Plame.
Right.
He comes, he was about 8, I think, at the time. He comes running in pre-dawn to say, "Mom, Karl Rove has been indicted." So I snap to consciousness, and he says, "Just kidding. Could you get up and make me pancakes?"
Oh, that is funny. And better write a book about it sometime, too. Really, wouldn't that be a fun book? That would be a
maybe lot. For other parents.
Other political parents. Yeah, I like it very much. All right, down to business. And unfortunately, a sad note on which to start, these medical aid workers.
Oh, awful.
Isn't that a terrible,
it's
terrible story?
Atrocious.
Ooh, you see their pictures and they're just trying to do good. Do we have any idea? I know yesterday the news was that we weren't sure that the Taliban had committed these acts of atrocity. Do we suspect that's who it is? And are they on the rise in Afghanistan? And the third question here is, Western aid workers have to be pretty skittish about doing work now in that country.
I think, to take the last part first, I think this is very chilling. And, you know, the scariest quote to me, and one of the stories we ran about it, was that they carried no weapons or Bibles. I mean, they weren't, they were a Christian group, but they weren't proselytizing. They were aid workers. And not neophytes either. These people had worked in the area for many, many years. So for them to have been attacked, I don't know that we know for sure, but it certainly does look like the Taliban. And we have a reporter, David Wood, in Afghanistan right now, who I just learned yesterday was back to the relative safety of our base in Kandahar doing some laundry and enjoying the AC. But he was out on Taliban hunting missions with some of our troops. And I don't know that the number is growing, but there are serious concerns about Afghanis really feeling too afraid to cooperate with Americans because they feel very threatened by the Taliban and what would happen to them if they cooperated.
It's hard to imagine, and maybe you know more about the strategy here that has been laid out, but it's hard to imagine a strategy that's going to turn things around in this country. What should we be doing that we're not doing, Melinda?
Well, they really are taking the long view, and they really are, even the long view, as much as you can have one while you also say you're getting out in the next year. I don't think anybody really believes at this point that's going to happen. And I don't think there's any way to do this quickly. I think they are really concentrating now on helping them build up their country. And beyond that, there's no quick fix for Afghanistan, if there's a fix at all.
Let's talk about immigration for a moment, that 14th Amendment. Are Republicans serious about dropping this amendment, and where is this immigration debate going?
Well, they keep, the Republicans, that is, keep going back and forth on whether or not they think that's a good idea. I think that would be disastrous, even for the Republicans, even though there is a lot of heat over the issue, they could kiss the Hispanic vote goodbye for a generation. So I don't think that anything that extreme is going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, nothing is going to happen before on immigration, period, before the midterms.
It is interesting how the situation has changed when you look at President Bush's idea of bringing in Hispanic voters to the
right,
to the fold of the Republican Party, and how that has changed in the years since he's left office.
That's right. And Bush was on to, he had it right. You know, that is an important and growing sector that the Republicans can't just write off if they want to have a majority, if they want to be a majority party. An interesting poll I saw recently on immigration said that a majority of Americans now believe that though the whole theory of the melting pot worked well in the past, it doesn't work in today's America. And I thought, you know, it worked well when our families wanted in, but now that we're safely within the borders, people don't seem to feel that generous impulse toward others.
Mm-hmm. Unemployment rate released again last week. The numbers just don't go up or go down in terms of the number of unemployed. We were traveling through beautiful country in Minnesota and in Wisconsin, but I was interested in the work that was done in the Roosevelt era in Minnesota in terms of planting forests, and you can see traces of that all over the United States. Would it behoove the president, I don't know where he'd get the money or if he could get enough support for this, to really put together some kind of put people back to work, you know, let's plant forests, let's make sure that our infrastructure is in better shape than it has been. Why doesn't he go that route? Should he go that route?
I think so. There was some of that kind of effort included in this very unpopular stimulus package, and I think that they were outgunned in the message war over what the stimulus really accomplished. But since it's both the right thing to do and the political thing to do, I think that anything he can do to create new jobs when you have a 9.5 unemployment rate, so many of these people long-term unemployed, manufacturing a few more jobs. But really, I think he needs to do exactly the sort of thing that you're talking about to get it done.
Mm-hmm. The other news that keeps making news, of course, is that President Obama spent his 49th birthday by himself. With Oprah. They had dinner and more than a few close friends. Everybody, I'm sure, wanted to celebrate with him. Has the press made too much of this trip to Spain? Is it too extravagant? Wrong time, wrong place, wrong message?
I don't even know if it's it's the press responding to views from the opposition. Not that it's anything new. I think that whatever party is in the White House, the president and first lady are always blasted for constantly vacationing, and wherever they go, it's always the wrong place, and it's always too lavish is always the word. But, you know, personally, it's not an easy job being president or even first lady, and so should she have waited and gone to Marbella another time, maybe, but it's always an issue because the opposition always makes an issue of it. But do we really want stressed out people living in our White House? Maybe not.
Can you imagine not being stressed out? You're right. What a job this is.
Right.
What a job.
Right.
Oh. All right, let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Melinda Henneberger, editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com, is our guest. Jim from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi. What I wanted to talk about today, and it kind of ties in with the loons, because there were reaction to the Muslim Center in New York, and Muslim atrocities, Christian atrocities, and then tie it together with a line from a Chuck Berry song. Of course, some Muslims have done atrocities, and there's no justifying them. It speaks for itself. But the Muslim Center in New York is involved in a goal of reconciliation. They had a hard time finding a location in New York City. Of course, land is hard to acquire, and this happened to be the one that was available. And last night on CNN, they're talking about the fact that they're going to scrutinize have their financing of their center scrutinized by Homeland Security so that there's no, quote, dirty money going into it, that it comes from legitimate moderate Muslims. Regarding Christian atrocities, we have a long history of that, and we have a tendency to ignore that. What we did to the Indians, how we raped black women during slavery, May Lai, Timothy McVeigh, and the man that shot up the Unitarian Church in Tennessee. So there's a long, long history of Christian atrocities, and we point out the mote in the Muslim eye of the extremist elements, but we don't look at the mote in our own eye in that regard. And this all, when we look at the conflict and the projection of hatred on the Muslims, it just reminds me of an old Chuck Berry song where it says, too much monkey business for me to be involved in.
Melinda.
Well, I think that's what you say is very true. Naturally, I'm sure you're not expecting any politician in any party to say anything like that because it would be so unpopular. But I thought that it was very brave, and one of Michael Bloomberg's greatest moments when he made a plea for the mosque and called it a key test of religious freedom in this country, and said that refusing to let it be built near the 9/11 site would be untrue to the best of America. So I think he's really calling us to be our best selves on this issue.
The New York Times had a front page story yesterday, I'm sure you saw it, Melinda, even mentioning Sheboygan, Wisconsin, where they say, and I quote, "A few Christian ministers led a noisy fight against a Muslim group that sought permission to open a mosque in a former health food store bought by a Muslim doctor." I'm sure these kinds of things are happening all over the country.
Right. But I saw a poll that said 61% of New Yorkers, that's the state of New York, not the city, opposed the site. So I'm sure that there are a lot of strong feelings. The Anti-Defamation League opposes it, of course. But it's religious freedom is what this country was founded on, so I hope that people keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim, so much for your call. Paul is next from Duluth. Hello, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen, and welcome back.
Thank you.
And to your guest, I can't resist this. When I first moved to Duluth about 11 years ago, I wrote a letter to a friend of mine in Denver, and I suggested to him that it wasn't a coincidence that the state bird of Minnesota is the common loon. And I'll let you take that any way you want.
Okay.
Just think of it in terms of Michelle Bachmann's district. There are more than 10,000. On a serious note, there's been an awful lot of saber rattling lately between North and South Korea, and I'm just wondering if your guest has any notion of what's going on there. We've been assured by Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton that Kim Jong-il is not insane. But I can't help but think that maybe he is. I'll listen off the air if I could.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
I don't have any special insight into that. I think that saber rattling has gone on there for a very long time. And despite recent increase in tensions, I don't sense that anything imminent is in the works, if that's the question.
Let's talk a little bit about midterm elections coming up, what it is that the Republicans need to do to gain some seats, what their strategy seems to be in terms of winning those seats. First question is, do you think they stand a good chance of taking back the House?
I guess I'm a little bit counter to the conventional wisdom. You hear a lot of pundits say that that's a very real possibility. We still have so much time in political dog years before the election that nobody really knows. If the election were held today, I think they would hold the House. 40 seats is a lot to lose. So even if people are very unhappy, I'm not sure in individual, it's sort of like being mad at Congress, but do you want to throw the bum you know in your district out? Maybe yes, maybe no. I think that in terms of the Republican strategy, they're pretty much running against Nancy Pelosi in almost every district in the country. And I think that what the Democrats have to do is do a much better job at showing that the work they've done on health care reform, on financial reform, which is going to take a minute to pay off, to bear fruit, they're going to have to do a much better job at selling those policies, because we're not going to be able to see the result of it that quickly. I think that what Republicans have to do is do more than throw stones. I think they have to show what they would do differently, and it seems that in most ads I've seen and in most pitches I've seen, what they're doing is saying that none of what the president and Pelosi have accomplished in the last year should have been done. So it's sort of, you know, maybe this Congress accomplished too much. Maybe they should have just been inactive for the last year.
Mm. Well, tell me historically what you need to do to win big numbers in midterm in the party against the party who's in office. Do you need to present a counter plan to what they've done, or is it okay to just be, as the president has suggested, a party of no action, of no plan?
I think that's right. I mean, in 94, which is the year that everybody is comparing this one to, which is the year I came to Washington to cover the class of 94 in Congress when Newt Gingrich became Speaker for the Republicans, you have to have a plan of your own as per Gingrich's contract with America. And we really don't see, at least yet, and again, it is early, but we really don't see that kind of coherent, here's what we would do other than undo everything that's just been done.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned some fairly substantial areas where the administration has put forward a great deal of effort and received some results. Financial reform, certainly healthcare reform, which was major. We could look at the auto industry. We could look at other things. But it's interesting, these years have passed, or a year and a half, and people don't remember that. So perhaps the Democrats have been terrible at reminding people the good that they have done.
I think it's difficult in every one of these heavy lifts that Nancy Pelosi primarily got through Congress.
She sure did, yeah.
Was very unpopular. The stimulus, because of the price tag, really unpopular. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult sell to say, well, even though our economy is not by any measure in good shape, it would have been far worse. And I think that is, economists say at least, that is the fact. I mean, we were headed for another Great Depression and were brought back from the precipice by this stimulus package. But that's not an easy sell. You know, it's bad now, but it would have been worse is not a fantastic political motto. Same, you know, with healthcare reform, again, that's going to take years to have the kind of impact where people say, you know, I like it that I can't get thrown off my insurance mid-chemo. I like it that we're paying less in the long term because people don't have to get their care from emergency rooms. I think that in the end, those will be healthcare, at least, will be very popular, but it's not going to be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And with financial reform, I'm particularly surprised that they've done such a poor job selling it after the scare of the financial meltdown and the excesses on Wall Street. I would think that a program to curb those excesses would be wildly popular.
Right. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for this Monday, the 9th of August. And our guest this hour is Melinda Henneberger, editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com. She's also the author of If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, and our email address. Nobody sent us an email yet. You could do that if you'd like. That's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Scott in Green Bay is next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm going to guess my politics differ a little bit from your guess, but my position is the president is going to be in serious trouble, I think, because of the jobs numbers more than anything else. We're coming up on a year almost since he said he was going to focus like a laser on jobs, and those were his words. And we're seeing very poor employment numbers, continuing to be poor employment numbers. The stimulus package, while there were some great things, and I've read the stimulus bill, a lot of it was not stimulative. There were things that just were not going to bring back our economy where we're going to have fuller employment than we have right now. And I think that's how the Democrats are going to end up losing it, because you've got a president who said he was going to focus like a laser, and it just appears to be that he isn't focusing like a laser on jobs.
Melinda.
I wouldn't disagree with anything you said, actually, Scott. I think that definitely jobs are that's going to be the top That's going to be what decides the midterms. I also think there's no question that they're going to lose a number of seats. I just am not sure they're going to get to 40 and lose the House. I think that the fact that Pelosi is calling Congress back to work on jobs only underscores your point that that's what it's all about at this point.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Scott, for your call. Tom in Burlington, hi.
Good morning. I have a political question, but I also have a little personal one. You have two twins, and we're expecting twins in 2 weeks.
Oh,
and,
congratulations.
Well, the thing is, I was not happy about it because you got the evil twin and the good twin. And the thing is, what I was going to suggest to my daughter-in-law is that she never tell the twin which one was born first. Do you find that the older one seems to use that against the younger one, or is that nonsense?
Well, my daughter is 1 minute older than my son, and it's come up several million times. But they will work on you until they learn that info, so good luck keeping that under wraps.
My next thing was Mr. Obama has fired his... she's been replaced, the economic
right.
advisor, his chief economic advisor. And I thought, well, it might tie in with what you're talking about now.
Well, Christina Romer is stepping down and saying that the old family reasons, and indeed she does have a son who's going into high school next year. So I'm not saying there's nothing to that, but she also, there were a lot of reports out of the White House that she felt very frustrated, that she was at odds with Larry Summers, and that, like our last caller, she didn't think that enough attention was being paid to jobs programs.
And thank you, Tom, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org, and we have a couple lines open for our All Things political segment here, which you always hear Monday at 9 o'clock. And we go to Hugh from Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. You were talking about immigration before. Now, one of the great contrasts between the new and the old immigration is that with the new immigration, they will get preferences in jobs and getting admission to a university and scholarships because of affirmative action. That will give them preferences over native-born whites. It is so unfair, and if you let millions of people become citizens, millions of illegal invaders become citizens, it's an outrage. And Bush was wrong, and Republicans and probably some Democrats, too, did not go along with liberal Bush's plan to legalize and basically another amnesty. Another difference, too, in the past, people were assumed, were expected to assimilate into America. Whereas, again, over the past few decades, we have had schools that keep the Spanish-speaking people separate, and they never really learn English very well. Another disaster, multiculturalism, that says other cultures are not only equal, but even better than the American culture. Because of the left-wing approach over the past few decades, it's all the more reason to make sure we do not go along with any amnesty plan under whatever phrase that Obama wants it. It's wrong. They should be deported. They should lose their jobs. They should not be hired. And if they do remain, they will get preferences and privileges.
Melinda.
Well, the last major amnesty plan, of course, was happened on the watch of that liberal Ronald Reagan. And so I think that President Bush was very much in the Reagan mindset in recognizing the reality that, contrary to your characterization of millions of invaders, we actually need immigrant workers and are only too happy to have them here for that purpose. I also disagree with your characterization of Hispanics coming here to get lavish treatment and preferences. That it's just not how it works. I mean, people, I know one of the great lines that people always say is, if you want to come here, do it legally, get in line. Unless you're wealthy, unless you're hiring people, it's very difficult to come here legally. And you have to understand that most of us who are here today wouldn't be here if we had been up against what people who want to come here for the same reasons our ancestors did were up against then. So you mentioned American culture. American culture has always been a mixture of many different cultures, and I guess we just differ in that I see that as a strength.
Melinda Henneberger is our guest this hour. It's All Things Political for Monday, August 9. She's editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program this Monday, for those of you who have students who are going off to college for the first time, we're going to be talking about the college experience with the director of the University Counseling Center at University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. It's an interesting time of life, and I guess he suggested, and I think this is a really good idea, what was the best advice you were given, the smartest advice you were given as you went off to college, and what advice would you give to young people now? What about alcohol and drugs that are on campus right now? How do you stay safe on campus? How do you make that separation successfully? And when you have freedom, for many students, parents aren't there to check and make sure you're doing your homework and they're not checking on your grades, etc. How do you make sure that, well, how do you help your student to really flourish in the life of the mind? So that's our number two of our program. All our lines are open right now for All Things Political. We've talked about a number of issues, unemployment. We've looked at the midterms. We've discussed this horrible story of medical aid workers being killed probably by the Taliban in Afghanistan. We've yet to talk about combat troops leaving Iraq, which, of course, is happening right now. We have looked at the Muslim Center in New York, the 14th Amendment, and feel free to comment on any of those issues or whatever you would like to bring up. Again, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Actually, one story that I really lost track of with no media, and it was one of the shows that we did right before I left, was the Elizabeth Warren story. Where is that possible appointment and the controversy surrounding that appointment to be head of the consumer agency?
Well, I can tell you that that's really hurting Obama with liberals.
Yeah.
I mean, even though he's certainly seen in that light by conservatives, he is losing support every day by dragging his feet on Elizabeth Warren. And it seems people don't understand what's taking him so long when it was her idea to have the Consumer Protection Agency. It was no one really understands what the problem is. That are we, because Wall Street opposes it, that would seem to be a recommendation for her rather than a problem.
Right. It's just such a natural appointment.
I
don't understand this either. So you haven't heard any scuttlebutt about it. I know Timothy Geithner had some problems with her. Do you have any idea of if that's holding a lot of weight here and when this appointment may be made?
I don't know when it may be made, but I know that every day's delay only compounds the problem for the president.
Right.
And it does seem to be more that, I mean, look at how the administration overreacted on this Shirley Sherrod story. And I think that at least it's seen in the same terms that, oh, Wall Street doesn't like it, so you're going to listen to the people that this watchdog agency is supposed to be watching?
Yes, right. Let's go to David in Crystal Lake. Hi, David.
Hi. I'd be interested to hear your guest's opinion on the grip that the two-party system seems to have on our constitutional republic. I have long been of the opinion that as long as there are Democrats and Republicans only, as long as it is us and them, or you are with us or against us, we can have no real educational or intellectual discourse in this country. And when President Obama was elected, I often said, if this gentleman can't get anything done, then our system is fundamentally broken. I'm interested to hear your guest's opinion.
Okay, thank you, David.
It's certainly, I share your frustration with it. I mean, it certainly the last year has been an exercise in frustration for a lot of people that it's very difficult to get anything, to get any bipartisan agreement on anything at all. I guess I see, though, the more fundamental or in tandem with the problem you're describing with the two-party system, I think the way campaigns are financed is really the even more serious problem, is that as long as you have people who have business before Congress, funding Congress, you have, if not a conflict, then the appearance of conflict, which in politics amounts to the same thing. And I think that when you can buy a place at the table, which is now perfectly legal under the way we finance campaigns, it's a real problem. I think you would have many more, so that if we had publicly financed elections, the two-party system would crumble immediately, because we'd have a lot of different voices rather than people who had to come up through the party and pay their dues in all senses of the term.
Yeah. Here's an email that's come in. Would you comment, please, on what the writer says is a misconception by Republicans that government spending is holding back the economy and extending the recession. John from Medford, Wisconsin, says the truth would seem exactly the opposite, but they are campaigning and running ads on this concept. How can the Democrats counter this mostly false assumption?
Well, again, I don't think that their message shop runs like a well-oiled machine. I would agree with the writer. I think that, take for example what Nancy Pelosi said about extending unemployment benefits and how that really does help the economy. All economists I'm aware of say yes, because all of that money is spent immediately. It goes straight into the economy, and if not creating jobs, it certainly keeps us from losing even more jobs. But so that would seem to be so obvious, and yet there's enormous pushback, and there are ads all over the country about what a supposedly silly thing Nancy Pelosi said, saying that extending the unemployment benefits has anything to do with stimulating the economy.
Bill in Milton. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, the economy is going to fester forever unless we get down to the root cause of the problem, and that is mad dog capitalism. The media, the talking heads, the powers that be won't even approach the topic, and that is the main cause of all our problems out here. We must do some fundamental thinking about what's wrong with the system.
All right, Melinda, take on mad dog capitalism.
Well, if by mad dog capitalism you mean unregulated capitalism, I think you have a very good argument. And, of course, many would say we have a wonderful socialist in the White House today. In fact, I think we have a very personally conservative president in office today who proceeds very carefully. And you have him really letting Congress take the lead. Congress has, I think, done an amazing job trying to reform our economy in lots of different ways, as I said before, healthcare, financial reform, so that, and look at what happened with BP. I mean, when we see what lack of regulation can lead to. So I think that if there's any moment when we can make the case that, yes, actually self-regulation doesn't work and government needs to have a role in that, it should be now. Yet again, I don't hear the administration making that case nearly strongly enough.
Thank you, Bill. Charles in Ingleside, Illinois. Hello.
Hello. Some remarks about our lack of hospitality of the Islams. It was almost exactly 200 years ago that England moved out of India down into Afghanistan and had wars there, a tremendous defeat in 1850 of the whole army, and then this continued to resist Russia's movement into that area, and we certainly have participated in that with Lawrence of Arabia destroying as much transportation as they could. And then after World War II, Brits moved in all over the Middle East, and we helped by taking Anglo-Iranian oil from Mossadegh and making it our own with the Shah, and et cetera, et cetera. It's never stopped for 200 years. But then about the economy, if the banks don't loan money to small business the next 3 months, 4 months from now, they do suddenly turn the money loose. You have a tremendous boom of employment, and it looked like a miracle again, as when Ronnie Reagan came in and got all kinds of accolades from his great achievements in Iran by getting rid of the Shah. So those little points, I think we should discuss things like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles, for your call. Melinda.
I think we certainly are up against history in Afghanistan. And on small business, I think that the White House is well aware that they have to do that they have to address the concerns of small business. And I think that that's what you're going to see as a major, major focus between now and Election Day.
And
the kind of loans that you're talking about to small business, and when we're looking at what's going to happen with these Bush tax cuts that would be sunsetted, that I think what you're going to see is a continuation of those tax cuts, particularly for small businesses.
And showing that you never know who's listening when you're on the radio, Melinda, here's Shirley, who has written, I graduated from Murray State, Kentucky with your mother, Lawrence, now in Evansville. I have kept in touch periodically, but I will definitely email her now, and I'll tell Frida it's refreshing to hear an objective reporter as Melinda.
Oh, that's great. I remember hearing about Shirley.
Oh, do you really?
Sure, I do.
Oh, isn't that good? All right, let's go to Wayne from Holman next. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, welcome home, Kathleen.
Thanks, Wayne.
Quick question to your guest, and I'm enjoying her conversation immensely. I pretty much come from the right, as Kathleen knows. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are. Barack Obama and his cabinet folks and spokespersons still want to go after George Bush. When do you think this game is Barack Obama's game to win or lose? I know he didn't support the surge yet. Apparently he's thinking it's going to be victory in Iraq now, and I don't expect him to congratulate George Bush. That would kind of be silly. But do you think at some point in time, like maybe after his second year or third year, he can't continue to blame Bush 43 for the issues or problems in America? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Wayne. Thank you.
I don't know that you – I hear him saying that. Of course, it's perhaps a matter of being sensitive to it. I don't hear him saying so much about Bush. I think it's already his economy, you know, after the – he can't continue. If he does, people are going to tune that out, because after the time he's been in office, I don't think that Bush isn't on the ticket. He is, or he's going to be in 2012. And this in 2010, the midterms are going to be seen as a referendum on Barack Obama, and that's what always happens, which is why party in power always loses seats during the midterm elections. On Iraq, I'm, you know, what Obama is saying is that it's sort of the opposite of what Bush said with mission accomplished. You know, Barack Obama the other day said, okay, we're going to have 50,000 troops there by the end of this month. And we're going to have complete withdrawal by the end of next year, although I'm not sure complete withdrawal actually means complete withdrawal. But he said the hard truth is that we have not seen the end of American sacrifice in Iraq. So at a time when you're pulling out, that's very interesting and I think realistic thing to say. From what I hear from our people on the ground, it's not such a rosy picture in Iraq, and so we'll probably be arguing as a country for a long time over what has been accomplished there. In terms of Afghanistan, he has, and for the liberal wing of his party, he has been all too Bush-like in continuing Bush's support of the war in Iraq and in going further than Bush ever went in Afghanistan. So, you know, when you're actually in that chair, some things that didn't make sense when you were a mere candidate, you realize that the ship can't be turned around quite so quickly.
All things political. For this Monday, the 9th of August, Melinda Henneberger is our guest, editor-in-chief of PoliticsDaily.com. She's also the author of If They Only Listen to Us, What Women Voters Want Politicians to Hear. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, we'll talk about how college students, those who are going for the first time, can successfully adapt and thrive in their new university environment. Joe Abhold, who is director of the University Counseling Center at UW-Oshkosh, will be our guest. Back to phone calls from Melinda, Jeff in Madison. Hi.
It's Jeff, yeah.
Hi, Jeff.
Just a quick comment on the Badakhshan issue. I was approached earlier this year to head over there with a group called Focus Humanitarian, which is another humanitarian group working in Badakhshan and Bamyan and some other allegedly safe provinces. And I contacted some colleagues in Kabul just to get a heads up on it. And they said, oh, yeah, that shouldn't be any problem at all. And so these killings, quite apart from the horror of the killings, I think they also signal, they're very disconcerting that they signal that there is now some pretty serious activity in provinces that were considered, and I put this in quotes, relatively safe, end quote, and it may signal a very significant change. That's it.
And will then signal a significant change in the number of people going to do aid work, right, Jeff?
Well, no. What I meant is the level of danger that they face in areas that I was considering going. That project, by the way, was put on hold. I don't know why, but it was before this incident. But it signals that the level of violence and risk in those areas is much higher now than it was.
Yeah,
I think that's right. Our reporter David Wood, who's over there right now, certainly has been reporting on that for the last 5 weeks, saying that. For example, in the so-called peaceful north is not so peaceful, that areas of the country, just as Jeff said, that were considered relatively okay, that's really no longer the case. It's very dangerous.
Which makes me wonder what our longer-term efforts will be. Anyway,
yes.
I will listen off there. Thanks
all right,
very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff, very much for the call. It is, every now and then, you just get hit in the head with some of these stories that are unimaginable, don't you, that are just so contrary to the way human beings should live. And why? You say, why? Why? They're aid workers. They're doctors.
Right. And some of these atrocities against girls trying to get an education. I mean, it's very disappointing, to say the least. It's really inhuman.
It sure is. Here's another email that's come in. We have about a minute left in the show. What do you think about an article in today's Times about the administration not deporting immigrant students here illegally and even pushing a bill in Congress giving them legal status? Is he going to take on immigration reform little by little rather than the strategy of a major bill? His strategy might be better than what was used in health care reform.
Well, if he's keeping, and I did read that Julia Preston's excellent story today, I think that if you're talking about students here, what a wonderful place to start. I mean, I think who could really argue, have the heart to argue, that people trying to get an education would be a group you would want to crack down on? So it's hard to say that those are people trying to cause us a problem, and aren't people who are educated exactly the sort of worker we want to have here?
Right. So what are you looking forward to covering this week, Melinda?
Well, I am in New York this week. I am having some meetings with our AOL parent company, and I know that my whole team is back in Washington working hard on, especially on this interesting story of Congress getting its vacay cut short, unlike Michelle Obama. They will be back in Washington working hard this week.
Thanks, Melinda, so much. You were a wonderful guest. Enjoyed
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
I enjoyed it.
Melinda Henneberger is editor-in-chief of politicsdaily.com. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And for all of your calls, everybody, thank you so much. We have news coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and we'll have another hour of Monday Conversation, so please stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.